just a few more days until Election Day here in Duval County. Lots of discussion about development around our town and demolition, too, and a brand new quarterback for the Jaguars. Good morning. This is First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross. I'm Kevin Getting, sitting in for Melissa. Thanks for listening. And just ahead, all the top stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. We're going to have a lot of fun this morning, a lot to talk about. The phone number for you to join in the conversation, call us now at 549-2937. Once again, that telephone number, 549-2937. Go ahead and call, and we'll be ready to chat here in just a second. Later on, too, we'll have a preview of the Rippingtons' March 28th performance, which will take place here at the WJCT Studios on the soundstage. All of that and more ahead. But first, this hour, it's Friday, and here to discuss a busy news week, we welcome David Barline from the Florida Times Union, Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jax Business Journal, and of course, Shelton Hull from Folio Weekly. Good morning, folks. How are we doing?
Good morning, Kevin.
Yes, how are you today?
Hey. Lots to discuss, from the elections to a new quarterback for the Jaguars, but first, our top story this Friday. Tuesday is Election Day here in Duval County, which may be surprising to some of you. Early voting is underway all the way through Sunday. All eyes are on the Jacksonville mayoral race. So who will be the next who will be the next mayor for the city? Will incumbent Mayor Curry be reelected? Will his opponents be able to garner enough support? That's what we're going to be talking about. And let's get right into it. David, is this going to be a close election or not?
It's not going to be a close election, and Lenny Curry will be reelected on Tuesday.
Yeah, and we're going to get to just the margin here in just a second. But, you know, if you had to write a two-sentence summary of this election, what would you write?
Incumbency matters. It's a good economy, and incumbents benefit with a good economy.
Tim Gibbons with the Jacksonville Business Journal. What's your sense? Is this going to be a close race on Tuesday for the race for mayor or not?
No. I mean, that when you get to the point of everybody saying, you know, best case scenario for Brochet is that she gets into a runoff, as though there's a lot of things that will change in the aftermath of the first election. No, I mean, it's not going to be close. And I think David's point is a good one. Voters are very keyed into the economy. The economy is doing well. Is that fair? I mean, you know, you look back at the Alvin Brown mayoral time when the economy was bad nationally, and you know, was that his fault? Is the good economy here locally Curry's fault? I don't think so necessarily, but that's how people vote.
Right. That's Tim Gibbons with the Jax Business Journal. Shelton Hull, Folio Weekly. Is it going to be a close race?
Probably not. You know, Brochet started the campaign 2 or 3 months too late, and she kind of got off to a slow start. She's got momentum on her side now. If the election were maybe another 2-3 weeks down the road, it might be a bit closer, but you know, time is not on her side right now.
So you sense a trend toward the race getting a little bit closer. What would be causing that? I mean, are people reexamining their support for the mayor?
I think the debate that we had a couple of weeks ago put a lot of spotlight on Brochet and especially on Jimmy Hill, and they've managed to parlay that into a lot of good media appearances. The turnouts for their little events and whatnot are better. There's a scientific team out there that's developed a machine that was able to push time back by a fraction of a second. If she had access to that technology, she might have a better chance of making the runoff.
All right, so we're going to jot these numbers down and then come back and look at them on Wednesday. David, what's the final margin?
So I'll say Curry 60%,
wow.
Anna Brochet 25%, Jimmy Hill 10%, and Omega Allen at 5%. And I'll caveat that by saying I have always underestimated the Lenny Curry turnout machine. So he may well go above 60, in which case everybody goes down. But I'll stick with that for my prediction.
And if that holds true, David, it would seem to me that that's like almost a political career ender for Anna Brochet, right? How do you come back from something like that?
To get blown out
that much.
Right. It would be hard to say you can use this as a building block for running for mayor in 4 years. Bill Bishop finished with about 20% when he ran 4 years ago. There was some talk he might run for mayor. It's tough to just come away with that percentage of the vote and then say, okay, I'm positioning myself for 4 years to run.
Right.
Although, you know, in some ways that actually fits in with Brochet's kind of narrative in a way, is that she's not looking at a political career. She's looking to be mayor. And I think that's actually one of the sub-stories of this race is we're looking at people who are in some ways playing two different games. The Anna Brochet campaign, you talk about, Sean, you talk about her coming in late. I think there's somewhat of a older, more genteel, more kind of local election feel to the Brochet campaign. And maybe 15 years ago, she would have done better. Curry's campaign is more hard-knuckled. It's more of a national sort of mindset sort of thing. He very much is looking at this as a political career move. And those are two different things that are going on there. And, you know, it's easy to see that one would be more advantageous than the other.
So Shelton, is a lesson learned out of this that negative advertising works? I mean, right out of the box, it seems like Lenny Curry went up with a lot of, or people or his supporters came up with negative television ads that hit her pretty hard and heavy early on.
Oh yeah, he definitely did that. Negative advertising works, but one thing that definitely doesn't work is no advertising at all.
Right.
And that was something that was kind of not really working in her favor. I think Dave's assessment of it is probably correct. I'd like to be more optimistic and hope it goes to a runoff because mm-hmm. I'd like to write more about it, but we just don't know right now. A lot of it spins on the turnout. Turnout with the early voting so far is still under 10%.
Right.
That's got to be disappointing for her and for Democratic candidates all down the ballot.
Right.
I think that if she loses, and assuming that she does lose, she still comes out of this as the probable front runner for the open seat in 2023, with mm-hmm. no Democrats really standing up to run this time around for reasons still unknown. It's not like one can't necessarily presume that they're going to put someone up in 2023. So if she just keeps rolling it on forward, which she won't admit to doing, but if she does roll it on forward from here, she still has a chance going down the road.
Four years is an eternity in politics. I mean,
yes.
The idea that, frankly, that if Brochet doesn't do anything between now and then, you know, in 4 years, that's not, voters don't have a memory that long.
That's
right.
True.
Right. So low turnout, would that have been driven by the negative campaigning or just the fact that voters don't care, David?
No, I think it's more the latter, maybe just a general apathy.
Right.
Part of it is there's no Democrat on the on the ballot. So I hear from staunch Democrats who say, okay, why should I vote for Anna Brochet if she's sort of a member of the same club as Lenny Curry?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a party label, it's a party identity thing. Mm. So I think that's part of it. And I think, you know, we just had a big election in November. Then in March, you got another election, a little bit of voter fatigue out there.
Sure.
And, you know, people are, you know, there has not been a real hard push against Lenny Curry from the Anna Brochet campaign.
That's one of the, you know, you look at the debate, and that was kind of Curry's pitch in a way, isn't so much the, you're better now than you were 4 years ago, but, you know, hey look, I'm doing a good job. She's not offering anything. And why change captains mid-course. And I think there is you talk to people who are not immersed in politics, the idea of they look around and go, yeah, life's pretty good. What's the value in changing? And you talk about the value of incumbency. If you're going to try to unseat someone, you have to make a very strong, here's what I would do differently. And I don't know if that message actually got through to voters.
Yeah. Shelton Hall with Folio Weekly. If people are cynical or they're just not really willing to turn out and vote and participate, that's in an atmosphere, though, where we got a lot of issues going on, right?
You
got crime, you got development issues we'll be talking about in just a second, all sorts of things that are happening at the local level, and yet you have voter apathy.
Yeah, well, it's not just apathy, it's laziness. The turnout for this election,
right?
It's embarrassing to the people of this city. As much as has gone on over the last few years, especially with all the crime stuff, everyone's complaining, everyone's all upset on social media, but they can't come out for 30 minutes to come out and do an election. You know, I think that whether you like Curry or you don't like him, no one has really given him credit for being as intelligent and as sophisticated as he really is. This guy's knowledge and his mastery of the local political system is kind of like nothing we've seen in this city in quite a long time. And I think maybe Brochet, one reason she waited so long, they may have thought it was a George Bush 1992 situation where he was just a patsy, like a wounded animal that could come in and get swept over. But this guy is, he's tough.
Yeah. That's Shelton Hall once again with Folio Weekly. David Bauerlein is here from the Florida Times Union. Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal, is here as well. You can join our conversation too. Call 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Let us know any questions you might have, any thoughts you might have on the race for mayor and other things that are going on in our part of the world. So let's talk about some of the political issues that we tried to play out in this election, including the issue of JEA. David, what's your sense of where that issue stands today, especially in relation to the mayor's race?
So UNF did a poll and found that selling JEA in all or part is hugely unpopular. It's definitely an issue where if that was the only issue on the ballot, that would be a real difference maker. But when you're talking to the UNF pollsters, they're saying, look, there's a lot of issues out there, and it's not like it's a wolf at the door type issue anymore. It was a huge issue a year ago. It's kind of fizzled out. It's not something that's uppermost on people's minds. And I don't think the Anna Brochet campaign or the other candidates have really created a fear factor in voters that, yes, you should really pay attention to this because it's going to get sold if Lenny Curry gets reelected. So it's not a decisive issue at all.
Tim, on that issue, isn't it one of those issues that's kind of complex, right? And the average rank and file voter who just hears, hey, there's a public utility that's owned by all of us and we think we want to sell it. If that's the only sentence of information they get, yeah, you're opposed to it, right? I mean, but when you start digging into it a little deeper, right, doesn't it become a little more nuanced?
Well, yeah, there's two things there, I think. One is, sure, I'm opposed to it, but is that enough to get me off my couch and go vote for the potential that the sale could come up again sometime later? The other bit is the nuance that you're pointing out, that I think people who actually look at JEA say, considering a sale, examining the possibility, seeing what the city could get for it, that's not in and of itself a bad thing. I mean, you look at your assets and you say, should we keep on owning this? Is there a better way of doing it? And I think Curry was able to use that to blunt the attack from Brochet because it became I wasn't saying sell it. I just, we should examine it. And it's hard to push back against examining a thing.
Right. Yeah. Shelton, when you look at that particular issue, overwhelming public opposition to selling JEA or doing something different, is that an issue that can ever change over time? I mean, is that something that will guide whatever political decisions are ultimately made? If you have that much massive public opposition, then it will never be sold? Or do you think that that could change over time?
Well, it's easy to express opposition by answering no on a telephone poll. Given the way the turnout is with this election, I don't think it really matters what the people think about this issue. The big question is, can we get fair market value for JEA? And then if it were sold, how would that affect the customers down the line? Curry has been perceived as being the person driving the push to sell JEA, and that may or may not be true. But given that the Democratic Party, 5 of 19 council races have no Democratic candidate, no Democratic candidate in this mayor's race. So, and when it comes to all these issues, especially JEA, because it is like the big sort of administrative issue driving this election, if Curry comes out of this, if he walks away with 60%, as Dave predicts, that could be interpreted as kind of a mandate from the people to just go ahead and do whatever you want and don't even ask us about it again.
Well, there's also, I think, the issue that the Curry in some way is running on this, and it's actually true, of the he's getting stuff done. Now, is that stuff that the people want done? Is it the best stuff to have done? That's an individual voter decision. But whether or not we should sell JEA, is it a conversation to have? Well, okay, yeah, maybe. Is the deal that the mayor struck with the owners of the landing, is that the best deal for the city? People disagree on that, but the conversation has become candidates saying the stuff the mayor is doing isn't the stuff that I think he should have done something different. He should have gotten a different deal with the landing. Well, yeah, but he got a deal with the landing that people haven't gotten in years. So it's kind of hard to run on just do something different without having a clear plan of this is what I would have done differently.
Yeah. And don't you elect leaders too at some level to make some detailed decisions that may not be massively popular one way or the other? We're not a direct democracy all the time where everybody gets in a big town hall meeting and raises their hands.
Thank God.
Yay on this, nay on that. Otherwise, no long-term, progress ever gets made, right?
Right. David, you had a thought? I was going to just say on JEA, the mayor has said that he's not going to introduce any legislation during a second term to sell JEA. And that basically means there's not going to be a big lock, stock, and barrel sale of JEA. Now, there's some latitude the JEA board has if they sell off assets that are less than 10% of the total value of JEA. They had that latitude all along.
Right.
That's something to watch. There may be assets they have that they think, well, we can make more money selling them off than we can operating them ourselves.
Okay. Let's jump to the calls really quick. We got a bunch of them. Linda from, Bay Meadows, you had some thoughts about voter turnout.
Well, it's just about the political environment in Jacksonville overall. Yes, there's low voter turnout, and that was intentioned. We always hear, we don't want our elections rolled into big elections because it will get drowned out. No, we just because we want to pick and choose who we want to have move forward. I just think that, yes, the mayor is getting things done. He prides himself on being a quick starter, go-getter, rollover. And I just think that this is a very effective head of the Republican Party.
Right.
I think as Sheldon said, you know, he's very effective because he is a political operative. And of course he knows how to move machinery around. And so let's not be like an overwhelming fan club. He's doing what he's done for years, but he's doing it on a smaller platform and he's steamrolling the opposition.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Linda, for calling. She makes one point, though, Sheldon, I'd like you to comment on. That notion of having these elections at sort of strange times, right?
Yes.
You know, let's face it, if you want big turnout, you have an election when you have the presidential election. We mm-hmm. know that's when we get the most turnout. We get 50% plus, right?
That's true. The selling point on having the elections where they are now is, of course, the idea that by having them sort of staggered away from the statewide elections, that we can put more of a focus on the local races, and that would give voters more time to really focus on it. And, you know, in fairness, that worked for years in this city. The way these low turnouts and this sort of voter apathy that we're seeing now, this was not really the case, as far as I can tell, in the 80s or the 90s or the early 2000s.
Right.
You go back just, you know, a couple of years when you had more people running for mayor, you had more viable candidates, and it really, mayoral races did seem more of a more competitive. And it, I don't know if that's the candidates themselves or the just a different time, but I also think that you know, Kevin, you mentioned just fatigue, the idea mm-hmm. of national politics can be draining, and mm-hmm. you know, you go through the gubernatorial election was a very it took a lot out of people, so
sure.
You end up with maybe there is just more fatigue after the national and state elections than there used to be.
Yeah, that's Tim Gibbons, by the way, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal. David Berline, if we had a mayor's race tied to a general election, say November of 2020, with President Trump on the top of the ballot and a mayor's candidate at the top of the ballot, would we have more participation, or what do you think?
Well, without a doubt, there'd be more participation, and there would be far more people casting votes in who their local leadership is.
Right.
But to Shelton's point, you know, that would be, you know, you might get the local issues could be drowned out in terms of the campaign that takes place.
Would you get different candidates? Not necessarily, mm-hmm. right? Because then you can kind of run on a brand. You don't have to get all that detailed, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. You could just, you would definitely have a Republican and a Democrat in every race. That would happen without a doubt, because there would be, you know, Duval County has come close, and then recently in the gubernatorial election did have Democratic candidates who won the county. So
you can
get a real coattail effect, which you really don't have right now.
Now you can join in the conversation too. Give us a call, 549-2937, 549-2937. Let's go to Ira. He is calling from the South Side. We're going to talk about, voter apathy. You have some thoughts about that, Ira?
Yes, thanks. So I'm new to Jacksonville last 3.5 years, and I've just been sort of perplexed by the idea of how Curry, who was, I understand, previously the Republican state chairman and the person responsible with the gerrymandering that basically reduced the minority representation in these districts. How in the world we have a mayoral election where there's no progressive Democratic challenger, because otherwise the mayor's throwing money around for some of these poor parts of town, but I don't see how that's actually helping them, because it's being funded by the multi-billion-dollar debt that he put on the city with the pension business. You know, I heard him at a town hall meeting talk about that pension tax was a net present value that he could borrow from. So why aren't your reporters doing the Hunter Thompson Gonzo journalism and finding out where he's getting this money and who these Florida on the Rise people are out of Tallahassee?
Thanks, Ira. Ira, this is Shelton, you know. Why aren't you on the job, man?
Well, if you looked at our eyes right now, you would not question our Gonzo credentials. And as far as we were talking about the staggered elections, look at Chicago. Chicago is having their mayor's race in the springtime just like us, and they're looking at very high turnouts. They've got two liberal Democratic women running for – two black liberal Democratic women running for mayor up there. And, you know, for years, for decades, the Democratic Party controlled this city, like, pretty much completely. It's only been really the last 10 years that we've started to see this kind of weakness on the part of the party, and that goes to pushback. There are we had the blue wave last November. We have tons of liberals, tons of union support, tons of progressive activists around the city. There's just no one who's there to lead them and organize them. They don't have a Lenny Curry. You know, Lenny, it's 9:15 now. Lenny Curry's already thinking about lunch. He gets up in the morning. First thing he does is wake up the rooster.
Right.
You know, how do you compete against a guy that works that hard?
And I think that's part of the apathy thing, that you look at the Gillum race, for example. People got excited about it, and if you don't have a candidate that excites people, it's hard to get that turnout. I do find an interesting kind of vibe in the caller's words that I've heard from other people, which almost seems to be this isn't fair. You know, Curry has the entire political machine, and he's just out there raising a bunch of money, and you know he's playing like hardball politics, and that's just not fair. But that's politics these days.
Yeah, and that's every incumbent.
Right.
Yeah.
And the idea that we don't have a Democratic candidate, you know, is going to obviously depress turnout. But there's a certain oddity to me to people who complain about things that they don't like that the administration is doing, but aren't actually coming together to do anything about it.
Right.
And Curry didn't inherit a machine. He built a machine. 5 years ago, the Republican Party in this city was as splintered and as fractured as the Democrats were. He did the work of bringing all these people in, and regardless of what one may think about the kinds of deals he's had to cut, he has looked out at each of these different factions and figured out what it takes to bring them all working together in the manner of the old TV show Voltron, perhaps.
David Barline, clearly you guys at the Times Union haven't done enough of a job of softening up the mayor. That's why this race is going to be a blowout.
Yeah.
Is that a fair summary?
It seems to be the consensus
here. Ira would agree anyway. Right? Hey, let's hear what B has to say. B's calling us from the South Side. B, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, B, what was your thought? Go ahead.
Yeah, my quick comment about the voter turnout is that I heard your roundtable. I kind of slightly disagree with some of the things they're saying about the laziness. One thing that I found out is that some people were just misinformed. And what I mean by that is they did not know that as a Democrat that you can vote in this election for a Republican. Case in point, when I was at the barbershop last night, everyone that was in there does not want Lenny Curry in there. But they did not know that you can break the party line to vote for Anna Brochet. So once I informed some of them, their next thought was, okay, well, I'm going to go out and vote. So my point is a lot of people did not know that you could break party lines in this election. And then the news media, it really wasn't out there that you could break a party line, except for your station.
Right. I appreciate that. Right, I'm sorry. So, Shelton, how about that? I mean, is there just a lack of information about who is eligible to vote in this election?
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion about that, but it's been this way for 40 years. So I don't, you know, maybe the Brochet campaign should have been throwing some money to Mr. B there to be driving around and like telling more people at the barbershops. Because again, if you're the challenger, the onus is on you to bring that turnout, to bring those people out there and to make sure everyone understands how the rules are. And, you know, I just thought of this, but maybe one factor in the weak performance of the Democrats this time around might be the absence of Karine Brown, because for many years she was essentially the leader of the Democrats in Northeast Florida. And by taking her out of the picture, there's no one to, you know, kind of corral the kiddies.
So we're sort of missing her voter turnout machine, right?
Yes, the quick picks.
There is that confusion with the runoff sort of system. You know, if you Google election day Duval County, the answer on Google is actually in May. that's the election, assuming that, you know,
right,
it doesn't, that there's not a clear winner this time. I remember having an old editor who would get, you know, enraged when people would refer to this as the primary and the other as the election, because this is not a primary. This is the first round of the election. But I think there are a lot of people who are confused that, you know, it's some weird primary runoff sort of thing.
Yeah. Hey, we've got Bill on the line. Bill calling from Mandarin. Bill, what are your thoughts?
Hey, first of all, I want to recognize a very fine editorial in today's paper by a guy named Robertson, who simply said this city is plain and boring and average at best, that we overestimate our value. And this is somewhat, I think, evidenced in our city government in terms of how exciting it is not to get out and vote. If I may be one extra comment, we did a study on scalability in New York City, which has 10 times the population and a $74 billion budget, has her mayor and councilman going full speed. If you scale that down, that means our mayor and our city council only need to meet about 2 weeks a year. That's how unexciting and boring election is here. Thanks very much.
All right, Bill, thanks for calling. Boring elections, huh, David? Are elections boring? I mean, Sheldon was talking earlier about the race in Chicago, and that seems like it probably is a little more interesting, but there's a little more going on in Chicago, a little bit more history, right?
Right. Well, certainly compared to 4 years ago. I mean, 4 years ago, Alvin Brown actually raised more money when he ran for re-election against Lenny Curry, and they both raised millions of dollars. And I think one of the big differences, too, from 4 years ago was that he had a prominent Democrat on the ballot, and the state Democratic Party, they can't win statewide in Florida. That's been their big problem. But every urban center had a Democratic mayor. So they really had a point of pride that they were going to try and get Democratic policies in at the city level. So they pumped a lot of money into the race. This time, who does the state Democratic Party turn to? They're not going to give money to Anna Brochet's campaign, a Republican. Yeah. So I think that has made it, I don't want to use the word boring, but it's made it less contested. And when it's less competitive, that means you have less of the friction and the intensity that you would have.
Yeah. Tim, what is the state of the Democratic Party in Duval County?
I think it has to kind of figure that out. I mean, Shelton would probably have more thoughts on this than I would, but clearly there is not a good thing in a, you know, two-party system to not have one party field a candidate. And I think that if the local Democratic Party is going to actually capitalize on whatever sort of blue wave exists, whatever's happening on a national scale, they do have to pull together in a more cohesive fashion.
So why didn't we have a candidate? Looking back now, well, what would you say, Shelton?
Well, I don't really know. I think part of it is the personalities issues. We have a lot of infighting among local Democrats, a lot of internal politics that get played out publicly. And it comes down to star power. Back in the day when we had guys like, you know, Hans Tansler and Jake Gottbold and Tommy Hazuri, these people were really giants in the community. They had a presence about them that we don't really see with local Democrats now. We have a ton of talent on the organizational level. We have a lot of really good people work. The city has a lot of good young Democrats that come 4 years from now, I think will be doing a much better job moving forward. But right now, again, it comes down to leadership. And I want to say to the caller, with all due respect to him, you know, I love New York. We all love New York. But, you know, Bill de Blasio is no Lenny Curry.
Yeah, there you go. Well, hey, that's Shelton Hall once again with Folio Weekly. David Berline is here with us from the Florida Times Union. And Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jax Business Journal, is here as well. So this still ties into politics and the mayor's race. But let's go to the development just a little bit more, and a piece that David has in this morning's Times Union about the HART on-ramps, exit ramps, and all that. All this goes into a multi-billion dollar proposed plan that Sean Conn has, and it involves, of course, taxpayers spending, you know, a few million bucks, right, to deal with some on-ramps.
That's right. So $39 million total, and about $14 million of that comes from the city, the rest from the state and feds. And they're coming down. I mean, it's going to happen. It's going to be this time next year when we come to First Coast Connect, we'll be driving through a construction zone, because what's been in place since the late 60s is going to be gone. And there's some opposition. People don't like it. Certainly, if you're a motorist, you're not going to like the detours and dealing with the construction, because that was such a nice ride. I mean, everything else has gotten worse with traffic. But that was like some time machine where it was always nice and easy to come over the HART Bridge and kind of glide into downtown. Mm-hmm. That's over.
Yeah. And yet a lot of cities right around the country are doing that sort of thing. I mean, there's that notion that interstate on-ramps, off-ramps divide communities, you know, even though they provide some convenience and they're all getting older. So then there's the issue of, do you replace them? Isn't that, that's part of this too, right?
Well, absolutely. There's lots of cities that have had great success in tearing down these elevated highways right. into downtown, opening up land. And that could possibly happen here if all these development plans come to fruition.
And it's not that unusual necessarily, right, that you would make these kind of roadway adjustments if a developer is promising to pump in a couple billion bucks, right?
That's correct.
Well, yeah, sure. The question is whether it's a good thing or not, right?
You know, this particular type of tear the ramps down is somewhat unusual. You do have the issue, it goes back to, you know, the 50s and having highway ramps basically disrupt neighborhoods.
Right.
What was a thing with urban development, sometimes purposely so, mm-hmm. where you drop the ramp in to purposely weaken a neighborhood. This is very much seen, though, as simply a Shad Khan wants to develop the shipyards. He doesn't want the ramps, so they have to be taken down. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. If anybody is going to develop the shipyards, the ramps have to come down.
Yeah.
You can argue that it's bad for motorists and that it will make traffic crappier, but it's a very binary sort of thing. Do you want the shipyards developed? You can't do it with the ramps there.
Yeah, that's a great transportation term. Crappier.
Yes, yeah. It's a term of art. Term of art in the transportation industry.
Yeah, because it's a language that we use all the time when we're driving. Hey, Shelton, what do you think? I mean, does this help the community? Is it necessary for development? I mean, what's your take?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the approach to roadway development in the city has always been kind of piecemeal. It seems like the overall agenda kind of switches up every 5 years or so, and that kind of reflects changing priorities in terms of development in our city. Different parts of town will just pop up and suddenly get huge, and we need to service that. You know, it's kind of like doing like heart bypasses. You know, we're just re-rigging around the arteries and whatnot. And Tim mentioned you know, how it goes back to the 1950s, and we had that caller from New York a minute ago. Look at Robert Caro's book about Robert Moses up in New York, and the absurd lengths he went to building some of those roadways up there. Talk about whole neighborhoods, whole cultures, you know, just ripped up, you know, early use of eminent domain and all that. It's unclear. We can always complain about these roadway developments and whatnot, but it comes down to money. And the proof is in the pudding, if we'll see in a few years if these roadways are bringing more people in and bringing in more tax revenue, then it works. Yeah. If no one's on it, you know, that's another thing. Personally, I'm holding out for jetpacks.
Let me ask you this just to close it out. Yes or no?
Jetpacks,
yes. This is definitely going to happen, right, David? Yes, no?
Yes.
All right. Tim?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
Shelton. All right. Good. All right. So now we're going to go to a really fun topic, right? Mm. We're going to change gears just a little bit and do a little sports talk radio, which you always get on NPR, right?
Oh, yeah.
But it's exciting news because it actually involves lots of money. Nick Foles coming to Jacksonville, Super Bowl MVP winning quarterback from Philadelphia. He's now Nick 904. And, of course, will be the new Jaguar quarterback. Announced yesterday amid lots of fanfare. Even his plane landing the night before was a big event, right, David?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a new kid in town, even though he's been in the league for 8 years. And there's a certain excitement about it in terms of how's he going to affect the team, and is he the guy who's going to rise to make it where the Jaguars can have a team that's competitive for four quarters. The big rap on Blake Bortles always was that in cleanup time after the Jaguars couldn't possibly win the game, he put up these great numbers.
Best garbage time quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, but you need somebody who's going to be there, who's going to give you that fourth quarter come from behind drive and keep you competitive and not wear the defense out because it's four and out all the time.
It's a tough world, though. Dog-eat-dog world where you're in the AFC Championship 1 year and basically 16 months later you're out on your butt, right? Yeah.
Yes, so that's the NFL, not for long league. So
I'm pretty curious what this does for the Good Place, the show that has right. made many jokes about the Jaguars and Blake Bortles.
Shelton, you know, we're in a city, you know, still in NFL terms, a relatively smaller market, right? Mm-hmm. $55 million guaranteed to one player.
Yeah,
one 30-year-old player.
I know they
good choice.
Yeah, I mean they almost gave him the landing too.
that was second prize.
Yeah, you know some fans are skeptical because we're used to the Jaguars kind of rising and falling, mm-hmm. blah blah blah. But now with the onset of this hashtag Big Nick energy, it seems that we've got, you know, for the first time in a long time, a real a real demonstration of a commitment to winning by the Jaguars, because love him or hate him, he has won the big game before, and that's something we haven't had in this city yet. And you know, it's hard to say. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done. There, we need more help on the offensive line. So if Anna Brochet is looking for work after this,
oh man,
yeah, she could definitely do better than some of these guys we've got on the line right now.
Oh man. Hey, if you want to join in the conversation, 549-2937 is the number, 549-2937. All this points to the overall question, you know, is Shawn Conn a good owner? Is he a good NFL owner and a good owner for the Jacksonville Jaguars, David?
On balance, I would say yes. I mean, he's invested in the facilities, invested in the team. So I would say he's been a good owner. I mean, they did get one game away from the Super Bowl 2 years ago, and they seem to have made a decision that they had everything in place, and turned out they didn't.
Right. I think last season was clearly a disappointment, but in some ways it was even more of a disappointment because expectations were so high that, you know, I don't know if I'm qualified to weigh in on the team owner question, if he's good or not, but I think that you can definitely say the Jags have cemented their place in Jacksonville, and last season was painful because the city has kind of renewed their embrace of the team, and you know, it'll be interesting to see what goes forward.
Right. And certainly, Sheldon, when you look around the NFL and you have, you know, issues with Mr. Kraft, obviously facing criminal charges in South Florida, you know, there's some people that get a little bit irritated by Jerry Jones, and Mr. Irsay's had issues in Indianapolis. Mr. Conn looks like a pretty darn good owner, right?
Yeah, it's you know, it's kind of a darn if you do, darn if you don't situation, because some would say he's not been active enough in player personnel issues. But then on the other hand, you don't want an owner who is known for just insinuating himself in all aspects of the team in the manner of an Al Davis or Jerry Jones or someone like that. I think that as owner of the Jaguars, he has raised the national profile of the team, raised the national profile of the city, and he, for better and for worse, he has invested a lot of his own personal hard-earned money in this community, really reinforced the idea the Jaguars are here to stay. But one thing I find interesting is that between Nick Foles and the Cure Violence program that we're looking at for dealing with some of the street crime here in Jacksonville, this is twice just in the first part of the year that we've looked to Philadelphia for a solution to our problems. And if Philadelphia is the solution to your problems, you definitely have a problem.
Yeah, no kidding. So, David, a $55 million investment. How quickly will we know if the Nick Foles move was a good move?
The first game of the season, I would guess. I mean, they're going to know, is the guy able to have enough? Is he going to be able to have time to complete passes? You know, do we need the Philadelphia offensive line too? Yeah. We'll know pretty quick whether this is going to work or not.
So, Tim, what's success with Nick Foles? You know, a winning season? Does it have to be a playoff season? Does it have to be a trip to the Super Bowl?
I think all of those things are things that people hope for. I would think a winning season probably is enough for the first year. Again, it's that optimism that we went into last season with that got dashed. I think people's expectations are probably more tempered going into the next season. But, you know, if we can actually have a winning season, playoffs would be great. Right. I'm not even going to, you know, entertain the idea of the Super Bowl this early. But
what if you have another 5-win season, Shelton, with a $55 million quarterback?
I think it would be, part of me thinks it would be riots in the streets. But at the same time, Jaguar fans are so used to underperforming, it might not be that big a deal. I think a crucial metric will be the first home game. I think what they're looking forward to is the first home game of the season. I'm not sure who that is against, but we need to crush whatever team that is. Maybe we could build a few on-ramps on the field so the wide receivers can get closer to the end zone with less traffic.
I think the other interesting bit there, though, and you asked what success is, and maybe this comes from, you know, ending the Business Journal, but in some ways it's not how well the team does and what their record is. It's how many people are in the seats for those games.
This seems like a season ticket sales booster, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, remember a couple of years ago when everybody was talking about, you know, basically just trying to get a fan-friendly quarterback that people would be excited about. And, you know, if nothing else, if you look at the hoopla around him coming, this has definitely done that. People are paying attention. And does that get butts in seats? I mean, obviously the team hopes so.
I mean, whether we, you know, whatever your thoughts are about pro football or pro sports, you know, the quarterback like that can become a leader of the whole community, right? I mean, you look at Drew Brees in New Orleans, for example, coming out of Katrina and the like. There was, you know, whatever you think. I mean, the fact is everybody now is going to know who Nick Foles is. There'll be certainly an expectation that he has to be a good guy, right, that he needs to lead.
Yeah.
Well, I think they need to go to the playoffs. I'll just say they should be a playoff team. I mean, they were such a young, they're such a young team still. Man. They have so much talent on the defensive side. The whole problem was the offense sputtered so often, the defense got worn out. Yeah, I think he needs to take them to the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. Shelton, you know, there was an interesting little piece I saw in the Times Union about, he said, I guess Nick Foles during his press conference, you know, that he and his wife are looking for a home, right?
Yes.
Does it matter where you live? You know, like, do you need to live in Duval County? Can he go live in St. Johns County because he's worried about the schools?
He could do that, but I think he'll probably want to be somewhere inside the city because that will speak a lot to his confidence in the team and his confidence in the city. Not everyone in Philadelphia was on his side, you know, when he was there. That's one reason he came here. And now that he's here in Jacksonville, now he knows it's his town and it's his team and he can put in the work and have as much success as he wants to. And I think he's going to seize on this opportunity.
Right.
If you want to see photos of Blake Bortles' home, which is for sale, you can go to the Jacksonville Business Journal, by the way.
Really? Yeah. It is for where did he live?
What are the odds?
He actually had two houses. And
we want to know. We want to know all this stuff.
Yes, I don't have the details in front of me, but yes.
Okay. So he lived on the beach. You know, and there's kind of, I don't know, I guess I feel a little bit of sadness about the departure of Blake Bortles. I mean, here's a Florida kid, you know, completely, a UCF guy that did well, that went, you know, really fast in the draft. And, you know, did go to the AFC Championship, and now we don't know what's going to happen to him, right?
Ups and downs.
I guess people just don't care, right?
Yeah, he was like kind of, you're right. He was just down the highway, Florida guy.
Yeah. His
great personality, a pretty tough competitor. But, yeah, it's hard to see now if he's got a starting position for him anyplace else in the league.
Right. No. Yeah, just from a, and we'll let Tim answer this quickly, and then you guys can comment as well. Sort of the business of sport and how it conveys to the whole image of Northeast Florida and Jacksonville. We'll talk about the TPC briefly, too. But, you know, when you get Nick Foles, a Super Bowl MVP, so everybody around the country that watches ESPN, business leaders and people thinking about maybe where to relocate a business, you know, Jacksonville becomes top of mind.
Absolutely plays a role. I mean, the idea of having the Jaguars here elevates Jacksonville to a higher stage.
Yeah.
You know, be one of a very small number of NFL cities. You mentioned the players a second ago. It's the same sort of thing. Mm-hmm. There are people around the world who are hearing about Ponte Vedra, who are hearing about Northeast Florida this week, who are visiting here and seeing what the climate is like, both the actual climate and the business climate. Nobody's going to move a company to Jacksonville just because we have a winning football season or we have the TPC. But can that sort of thing play a role in it? Can it start the ball rolling? Absolutely. You talk to economic development people, these are tools that they use.
It's a differentiator, right? Even though there's people that are walking into a restaurant, they may not even listen to anything, right, Shelton? You know, you don't really hear much about St. Louis anymore because they don't have the Rams, you know? And even if you're not a football fan, there's a level of consciousness that Jacksonville is a major place because it has an NFL team and it has a major golf tournament.
That's right. And it's sort of like if you're going to shop for jewelry, you might be going to look at wedding rings, for example, and the diamond may be the same size and the same cut, but the difference is in the setting.
Yeah.
And so what, you know, those of us who have been here, who remember what it was like 25 years ago before the Jaguars, they have been the primary factor in the development of downtown Jacksonville and everything else in this city in that time. So having them there is great. Having Khan reinforce the commitment to the city on behalf of the Jaguars is important, and having a guy like Nick Foles is a good thing. And one good thing about having Shah Khan as mayor, I mean,
wow. Can you slip, right there.
No, 2023 is a long way away, but one good thing about having him as the owner is that the players and the personnel know that if they are willing to do the work and then they're ready to win, then they will get the rewards. And he has no problem spreading the wealth, literally.
Good job, Shelton. Sean Khan for mayor, right? We'll take that up next time. Thank you, Tim, Shelton, and David.
Comcast Business, providing a gig speed network and gig-fueled applications that can help your business go beyond. Learn more at comcastbusiness.com. Comcast Business, beyond fast. Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. A company's cell phone policy can protect your employees and your bottom line. Our distracted driving presentation for the workforce can help.
Learn more at waynehogan.law.
With all that is going on in this economy, what is one supposed to do?
It's a risky environment right now to be doing business. We're holding off on major capital investments, and we're just in sort of a holding pattern.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, making sense of the news even when you don't know your next move. That's next time on Marketplace. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Did you know that pigs can be pessimistic and that chimps can be charming? I'm Ira Flatto. This week on Science Friday, we dive into the world of animal emotions with primatologist Franz De Waal and talk about what blushing says about our evolutionary past. Yes, animals do have feelings. Like, you didn't know that, right? It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Boeing grounded. But on what grounds?
The FAA makes safety decisions, period.
737 is also the number of inmates on California's death row. But the governor has news for them. And is the country ready for another president from Texas? Beto O'Rourke joins the Democratic race. The Friday News Roundup next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
So on March 28th, WJCT and the Florida Theater will present the acclaimed contemporary jazz group, the Rippingtons, live at the WJCT Soundstage. This is a big deal. This is the first performance in the organization's joint new WJCT Soundstage project. Russ Freeman is going to join us here in just a few minutes. He is the founder and leader, and this is a great group, a great opportunity for you to see some great music and hear some great music. See it too, I guess. The Rippingtons are an American contemporary jazz group. They specialize in smooth jazz, jazz fusion, jazz pop, and crossover jazz with a career spanning over three decades. The group was started in 1985 by guitarist and bandleader Russ Freeman. They're best known for his hits including Wild Tales, She Likes to Watch, and Caribbean Breeze. So joining me now live on the line is Russ Freeman. Russ, how are you?
How are you? Great to be here.
Man, great to have you here. And of course, so talk to me a little bit about the group itself. I kind of described, you know, what you guys, how you perform, what type of music you have. But talk to me a little bit about the group and what people should know.
Well, if they haven't heard of the Rippingtons, we've been around quite a while. It's incredibly how long we've lasted. But the group has been around since the 80s. We have Brandon Fields on saxophone, Bill Heller on keyboards, Dave Carasone on drums, myself on guitar, and Rico Bellet on bass.
Very good. You've got a new CD out, Open Road. Talk to me about that.
That is actually going to hit the streets on March 22nd. So it's just about to come out, and it's our first CD in about 3 years. So the fans seem really excited about it.
For folks out there that, quite honestly, have never been to a jazz concert, you know, convince them that it's something that they should try.
Well, there are a lot of fun, positive things about it, and they'd probably be surprised with the music. It's much more inclusive than just jazz. I mean, jazz evokes a kind of a back concert hall type of atmosphere, but it's more like a rock concert, especially our itinerary.
Right. This is going to be at the WJCT Soundstage, by the way. If you'd like to get tickets, go to WJCT.org. That's WJCT.org for ticket information. The soundstage itself, you seats a few hundred folks, a very intimate setting. What do you expect when you get to perform there?
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I love Jacksonville, and it's a beautiful setting, great city, and we have great fans there. So we're really looking forward to coming back.
All right. Talk to me about, you know, the folks that you play with, you know, the members of the band, if you will.
Well, I'm really proud of them, and they're consummate musicians. We're really lucky to have Brandon back in the band, because for years he's been a stellar sideman to many famous people. In fact, he's going out again with Barbara Streisand this summer. So
wow.
It's great to have him with us.
Well, you'll be performing once again at the WJCT Soundstage. Learn more by going to WJCT.org and learn more about this event with the Rippingtons live, on March 28th. You know, I gave some descriptions of your music, but explain to sort of the average person who may not know jazz all that well. What is jazz fusion?
You know, I think people have difficulty describing it because our music is so inclusive of so many different cultures and styles. We started instrumental pop. We've had some world music influences. There's definitely some techno influences, and there's absolutely rock and blues. So you add all that together, it's very difficult to describe it.
Yeah.
But I do want to say that there's one thing that does tie all this music together, and the fact that it's instrumental makes it a universal language. And I think that's why the music has been so popular throughout the world.
That's Russ Freeman, by the way. He's the Rippingtons founder and leader, and he's joining us live here on the studio line. He will be performing with the Rippingtons March 28th at the WJCT Soundstage. What a beautiful, intimate venue, only about 400 seats. You can get your tickets. You need to move quickly, though. Go to WJCT.org. That's WJCT.org. Any final thoughts, words to our listeners that might compel them to buy tickets and join us for the fun on March 28th?
Well, it'll be a really wonderful evening, and I think they'll be excited to see the new show we've got featuring the Open Road songs.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, once again, you can learn more about the Rippingtons, too, by going to Rippingtons.com. That's Rippingtons.com. And learn more about getting tickets, too, by going to WJCT.org. That's WJCT.org. And Russ Freeman, of course, founder and leader of the band, thank you, sir, for joining us. And have a great show when you come to Jacksonville next week, okay?
I sure appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. That's going to be our show for this week. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. If you have comments or questions about First Coast Connect at any time, you can send an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. If you missed anything this morning, you can hear our rebroadcast of First Coast Connect tonight at 8 on 89.9. I'm Kevin Gettings. I had the privilege of sitting in for Melissa Ross the last 2 days. She'll be back on Monday. Thank you for listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. 1A is up next. We'll be back at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend and enjoy a little bit of jazz here as we round out the show. Take care.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.